This Marketplace podcast is supported by Invest Puerto Rico. What's next in innovation? That's not the right question. It's where. Puerto Rico, more than just a tropical paradise, it's innovation's paradise, where startups and global players coexist in a vast and vibrant ecosystem, where talent runs deep, highly skilled, and bilingual. Plus, the island offers the most competitive tax incentives in the U.S. If you believe your business can go anywhere, Puerto Rico is the place. Find out more at investpr.org/marketplace. Again, that address is investpr.org/marketplace.
It's called protein degradation. And if you're a bad protein in a cancer cell, you'd better get your affairs in order. Because now, thanks to Dana-Farber's foundational work, protein degradation can target cancer-causing proteins and destroy them right inside the cell. This take-no-prisoners approach is making a difference in multiple myeloma and other blood cancers, and is how Dana-Farber is working to treat previously untreatable cancers. Learn more at danafarber.org/everywhere.
Can Congress figure out how to cut the deficit by $1.2 trillion in the next 6 days?
Marketplace Morning Report is produced in association with the University of Southern California.
From APM, American Public Media in Los Angeles. Good morning. I'm Jeremy Hobson with The Morning Open. A look at business and the economy as Wall Street starts the day. Coming up, environmentalists in China charge Apple suppliers with polluting the air and water. Apple is staying pretty quiet. But first, where's Wall Street? Stocks are down at the open this morning. The Dow down 61 points, about 0.5% at 11,844. The NASDAQ down 0.7%, and same with the S&P 500. After the government said this morning the number of people applying for unemployment benefits dropped last week to 388,000. That is a seven-month low. Now let's get to the Congressional Super Committee, which now has less than a week to agree on $1.2 trillion in deficit reduction over the next 10 years. And so far, no deal. Diane Swonk is chief economist with Mesirow Financial. She's with us live from Chicago, as she is every Thursday. Good morning.
Good morning.
So, Diane, you're in touch with all the big power players in Washington all the time. What's going to happen? Are they going to reach a deal?
Well, right now it doesn't look like it. I still have hope, but not a lot of faith in the fact that they will. But again, I have hope. Usually Congress takes it down to the deadline, and one deadline is actually Monday so that the CBO can score it up before Thanksgiving.
The Congressional Budget Office. And Diane, you know, the last time we had a big deadline like this in Washington, it was the debt ceiling deadline. And of course, that had immediate consequences for inaction. This time, the automatic cuts that would go into effect wouldn't happen until 2013. So does that mean that we don't really need to freak out about this deadline?
Absolutely not. In fact, the market repercussions would be fairly substantial, especially against the backdrop of the debt crisis in Europe. We need to look like we're acting responsibly and moving forward, and we can't afford to continue to look like the Keystone Cops in Congress.
Well, you mentioned Europe. I want to ask you about one thing on that front. This big warning that came yesterday from the ratings agency Fitch, which says that U.S. banks could face big problems because of the debt crisis in Europe. Is that for real, or I thought these banks in the U.S. had reduced their exposure?
Well, we actually have seen the banks in the U.S. voluntarily give their exposure on the sovereign debt crisis, and that was no new news that Fitch announced. They are exposed, but they are much more cushioned than they once were. That said, the Fed has been very vocal about the fact that our banks are in better shape, but let's face it, we're not an island. And if a crisis were to occur in Europe, it still could come back and bite us here in the United States, and that's what was really concerned about at the Federal Reserve. Although our banks are better cushioned than 2008, it doesn't mean we're immune, particularly in money market funds, where they're so exposed to short-term European bank debt.
Diane Swonk, chief economist with Mesirow Financial, thanks as always.
Thank you.
Well, now to the chairman of the House Financial Services Committee, Spencer Backus, who is firing back after being accused of insider trading as part of a CBS 60 Minutes story. Backus says he never made trades based on knowledge that wasn't available to the general public. Now, the 60 Minutes story spotlighted senators and representatives who have personally benefited from stocks they bought or sold based on information they learned in their jobs. But as our Washington Bureau Chief John Dimsdale reports, there's nothing illegal about it for members of Congress.
Lawmakers know before anyone else about government budgets, taxes, and regulations that can dramatically change stock prices. Maybe that's why senators' stock portfolios routinely outperform the market by 12%, according to Georgia State University's Alan Zabrowski. He says insider trading laws don't apply to Congress.
It's not illegal at all. There's absolutely nothing that prohibits members of Congress or their staffs from trading on information they pick up.
Zabrowski admits it would be difficult to police a ban on some congressional stock trading, but to give the rules teeth, he says members of Congress should have to immediately disclose what stocks they're buying and selling.
If the head of a banking committee starts unloading lots and lots of his bank stocks, the marketplace should be privileged to that information, and it'll make the market more efficient.
Zabrowski hopes the new momentum behind reforms will help get rid of the perception that some lawmakers vote to benefit their own stock portfolios. In Washington, I'm John Dimsdale for Marketplace.
Marketplace Morning Report is supported by Chevrolet, maker of the new Volt, which plugs in anywhere and goes everywhere. Available in select markets. Details at ChevyVolt.com. By CenturyLink, a new kind of broadband company linking Americans coast to coast with consistently fast speeds and personal service. More at CenturyLink.com. And by Thomson Reuters and their expedition to break the Overland speed record to the South Pole. You can follow them in real time at expeditiontothesouthpole.com.
Well, we all know how secretive Apple likes to be, but this week that's causing problems for the company in China, where environmental groups have accused Apple suppliers of major pollution violations. Apple has hired an outside company to look into those charges, but as Marketplace's Rob Schmitz reports from Shanghai, Apple isn't saying much.
Apple may be a lot of things, but few would call the company low profile, unless you're talking to Apple about their supply chain. That's what environmentalist Li Li did this week.
They just kept saying, believe us that we will make it work. Our company is low profile. We have our own way of solving problems.
2 months ago, she helped author a report. It alleged the suppliers that are making iPhones and iPads are blatantly violating pollution laws throughout China. She said Apple flew two Chinese-speaking members of its supply management team from the U.S. just for this meeting. She's not sure why Apple went to all the trouble, though. She said the only thing they admitted to was the number of suppliers they work with in China.
I am not satisfied at all with what they said. We need them to disclose who their suppliers are. If they are unwilling to do that, then how do we know if they're doing the right thing?
Apple says it provides safe working conditions and uses environmentally responsible manufacturing. But so far, this hasn't held up to public scrutiny. After Apple admitted to poisoning 137 workers at one Chinese plant, it said it was monitoring their health. But several workers later said they had never heard from Apple. In Shanghai, I'm Rob Schmitz for Marketplace.
And finally, to a report out today on which students hit the books the hardest in college. The National Survey of Student Engagement says engineering majors study the most, about 20 hours per week. They're followed by science majors, then those in the arts and humanities, and then education. Bottom of the list, business majors. In Los Angeles, I'm Jeremy Hobson. This is the Marketplace Morning Report. This is APM, American Public Media.
Here's an economic indicator, skyscrapers as symbols of financial health.
The biggest skyscrapers originally were built by corporations to show how wealthy and how powerful they were. But certainly in terms of China, there is that sense that we are going to build the tallest building because they want to show they can.
I'm Kai Rizdal, high and mighty, next time on Marketplace from APM, American Public Media.
The world can be a confusing place for kids, and finding the words to explain it all can be tricky, too. Introducing Million Bazillion, a Webby-winning podcast from Marketplace that takes your kids on exciting adventures to answer the awkward and complex questions they have about money. Each week, we tackle hard-hitting inquiries from kid listeners like,
what is a college account and how does it work?
I want to know what unions are and what they are for.
Why does the U.S. have so much gold in Fort Knox and what do they use it for?
Help your kids understand how money fits into the world around us. Listen to Million Bazillion wherever you get your podcasts.